Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your Dadaist NBA podcast, because nothing makes sense anymore. It is Monday, February 6th, 2017, and I'm your host, Joe Borelli. What's up, people? Coming at you live from my studio in Brooklyn, except for, well, I'm live, and hopefully we'll still be alive by the time you hear this, but you won't hear it live. You know, see, it's I don't know why I say live. You know, it's like I'm on the radio. It's like, you know what's funny is when I was a kid, I used to listen. My mother would put on these radio programs for me when I was little. Like, I grew up in a very religious house, right? And one of the ways my mom would get us interested in their religion, I suppose, is to play these radio plays for us, like David and Goliath. She would put on these records and record players. I don't know. They were some of my favorite things in the world, right? I love the idea of being able to just build a world in your mind rather than see it on a screen. So, like, obviously you all know this, but when you're watching a movie in the theater or you're watching something on TV, you know, you're obviously subject to the director, right? You're seeing their vision, what they have in their head, not what not what you would have in yours. And so, I mean, like, this is obviously why people love reading books, right? Except for me, when I'm reading a book, I mean, I love books too, don't get me wrong. But when I'm reading a book, it takes often so much freaking concentration to get through the words. Like, not always, but sometimes, like, you know, you have to be conscious of the page. You have to read it. And in doing that, a lot of times for me, it keeps me from truly entering into a world in my mind, right? Like, I have to be cognizant of what I'm reading. I have to be conscious of the page. I have to keep moving forward and actively pursue this thing. Like, I have to read, right? Reading is beautiful. Reading is lovely. I do a lot of it all the time because, well, I have to for work. I have to read emails, and I read the news like crazy because I'm obsessed with what's happening in our government right now. But when I'm on the train and I can plug in or just completely unplug and put headphones in and listen to somebody else narrate for me, like when you're listening to an audiobook or when you're listening to a podcast. And there are some really great podcasts. Like, I think, I don't know if I've ever told you guys, and if you don't know about Lore Podcast, Aaron Menke, there's some free advertising for Lore. I love Lore Podcast. If you guys like horror, that's a good one. Old Time Radio, they do, it's a program called The Horror. There's more free advertising, but I don't care. These are great podcasts. And so they build these worlds. Like, when you're back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, before, you know, the advent of television, before television became accessible for everyone and they can go and, you know, gather on the TV. When people were younger, they would have to gather around, or obviously we know this, you know, back in the earlier days of, you know, Americana and what everyone wants to turn this country back into, idiots, people would gather their families around the radio, or so we were led to believe, but people would listen to radio programs. And in this, in some of these podcasts out there, man, they, you know, you get to hear these really old radio things, and they build actual plays. It's as if you are, you know, watching on TV. They have like characters and these scripts, and it's really genius stuff. I love it so much. But so for me, when I say, hey, I'm coming at you live, I always like kind of like to think of myself as building this little world, you know, and I get to tell you guys stories, although, you know, my stories often don't go anywhere and I have really not that much to say. It's fun for me. So it's fun for me, and I'm glad that you guys get to come along for the ride, and I hope it's fun for you too. I don't really have much to say about that. It's just that, like, I highly recommend listening to audiobooks or checking out some of these old time radio shows. Other than that, you know, not much is going on. Still winter, still cold. I finally got to go for a run today, and it was miserable. Not because it was not nice outside. It was really nice. I mean, for February 6th, it was like almost 50 degrees. That's beautiful. The problem was I haven't run in like 3 weeks. And so I am so sore right now and so tired. And I could only do like 4.5 miles because I'm really out of shape. Man, the holidays kill. They kill. Like, we overindulge with food and beverage and hanging out with our family and being lazy. Like, you need some downtime. Living in New York, especially, like, everyone here works so much all the time. All we do is work so we can pay our rent. It sucks. But if you want to be part of this giant community and you want to be part of, like, you want to live in the city that never sleeps and be able to do anything you want and access everything, you have to pay to play, right? So that's cool, and I understand it. It's just that when you get that little bit of downtime, that time to yourself, it becomes so important. Here's another funny anecdote for you. Once my brother came to New York City for New Year's. I think this was the first New Year's he ever came to New York for. And he wanted to go out and he wanted to have a good time. I was so exhausted from the work week and just having, like, back then, I still had a studio, and I had a gallery, and I had, it was a small gallery in Brooklyn, but whatever. And I was working a full-time job. I was barely sleeping. I was working all the time. So he came up, and we went out for New Year's Eve, and we got good and toasty and whatever. We hung out. It was a lot of fun. But the next day, it was, January 1st, and, like, all I wanted to do was sleep and lay around. And so my girlfriend was over and my roommates, I lived with four other people at that time. And we just sat there and we watched Monk, because, you know, Monk's a fun show. And we sat there and watched Monk all day long. And my poor brother, I still feel bad about this to this day. Well, first of all, it was really cold. It was like 1 degree out that year. And I really did not want to go outside. But he's like, hey, man, can we go do something? And I was like, all right, cool. Just maybe after this episode, an episode later, it's like, all right, can we go do something? I'm like, yeah, man, maybe, like, just give me a minute. Like, I just got to gather my thoughts. I got to get up and we'll go. And then, you know, by about 8 o'clock at night, we're still sitting there watching Monk on a marathon. He was like, I'm gonna go home now. I'm like, oh, come on, stop. It's like, just stay, hang out. I still feel really bad about this. So Frank, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I still feel guilty about not taking you out to do anything while you're here in New York. But my point is that, like, New York is it's a wonderful place, and it's exhausting. So anyway, not that much for you guys this week. Nothing's really happened since last week. And I mean, there's always good things to talk about. And this week, I promise you, I'm going to write down some of my stories that I think of in between recording now and recording again. Because during the week, usually at work, and this is why, I fail to remember these things or write them down. So I'm at work, I'm working on other things. And once in a while, a great idea will pop in my head. Like, oh man, I could talk about this for the podcast. It would be fantastic. It would be amazing. I got to remember to write this down. And I invariably forget every single time. So my apologies, guys and gals. I will get better at this. I'm still, pretty fresh in the game of hanging out with you folks and talking. But, anyway, it'll be fun. We'll have good things. I actually have some friends that lined up for the summer when there is no NBA that I think are going to make for really good podcasts. Nothing about NBA, but maybe a little bit about things that you guys and gals could relate to outside of NBA. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Tonight, and we're going to be recording late, so this probably will not come out till tomorrow, but tonight, Gary Jones of the Zardcast is going to be on the podcast, and we're going to talk about the Wizards and about their really slow start and how they've really turned it around. And they're actually playing right now. And I really want to go watch some of this game before it's over. So, I'm really excited to talk about some John Wall and Bradley Beal and all that. In other news, nothing. But so Gary's coming up. And after these messages, we'll be right back. Today's sponsor of the Superflight podcast is Steiner Sports. At Steiner Sports Memorabilia, you can get all the vintage sports gear you've always dreamed of. From posters to baseball mitts, jerseys to signed footballs, Steiner Sports has it all. There's even an online auction where you can bid on memorabilia from your favorite teams or players, like that Allen Iverson signed basketball I have my eyes on. So go to SteinerSports.com now and enter promo code ALMIGHTY to get 20% off your purchase at checkout. That's SteinerSports.com and promo code ALMIGHTY, and make your vintage sports gear dreams come true. Okay, now on with the show. All right, take two. Gary, welcome to the Superflight. How's it going?
It's going good. Glad to be on.
Good. I feel like you just said that.
Yeah, this seems familiar.
Deja vu, man. Something about unseasonably warm days and stuff.
Yeah. I think that's what we were talking about. This beautiful 70-degree February day.
Wait, it's 70 there?
It's 70 in D.C. today.
You are
record highs.
Oh, my God. You know what? Global warming doesn't exist, just so you know.
And then it's supposed to snow on Thursday.
Oh, my God. That sounds insane. But 70 today, DC is, like, no offense, one of my least favorite East Coast cities, just because, I don't know, it's not that manageable for me, but I would love to be there right now if it's 70 degrees. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of winter, so this is a good day for me.
Yeah, seriously. Anyway, so you've come on the show to talk about some Wizards, what I'm going to call the wonderful Wizards of Walls. How's that? How do you like that?
I think it's catchy. If you hadn't already said it on recorded radio, I might steal it. But since this is documented, I can't.
You can take it, man. It's fine. Feel free. Why don't we tell people how to reach you on Twitter? And do you write it all, or you just do a podcast?
I just do the podcast. I've tried some writing. There's some like long pieces I kind of have done some research for, and then not actually fleshed out into anything yet, so I'm thinking of venturing into that, but I have not yet. I just do the podcast. It's Zardcast, which is on Twitter as Zardcast, and then me personally, I'm the Gary Jones on Twitter, and that's Jones with a Z due to the Gary Jones with an S being taken.
Oh. Well, that's unfortunate, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I tried to look you up on Skype, and there are so many Gary Jones, so yeah, it makes sense. Oh, that's why I couldn't find you. I used an S, right?
I think on Skype I'm an S, but
all right, fine.
It doesn't surprise me that there's plenty of us.
In that case, I'm just bad at Skype. Let's see. So you're on the same podcast network that I am. It's the ABPN, so I'll throw it out there for you. If you guys want to follow the podcast, either of ours, you can go to Almighty Baller and check us out. Zardcast is pretty fun. I was listening to it again today, and it's weird. Whenever I have guests on, and I'm like, what am I going to, like, whenever I have team-specific guests, I'm like, what am I going to talk with you about? You talk about this stuff all the time, but I don't talk about it, so let's do this for my audience. The Wizards, I'm looking at a whole wrong thing here. I can cut all this out.
No sweat, man. I think it's a mutually beneficial thing, because for you, you don't get to talk to someone who only talks Wizards. And for me, our podcast is essentially only Wizards. So, I get to branch out a little. You get to hone in a little.
Yeah.
Seems like a good deal.
And usually, I always say this to my guests. Honestly, like, I follow the entire NBA as much as I possibly can, but how many games can you possibly watch in a day when you have a full-time job? So I like to learn from you guys. Whoever I have on, my guests, I like to learn something from you. And I like to think that the audience does too. So you're here to teach us today about the Wizards. How's that?
That probably overstates my capabilities, but I like it.
Yeah, you'll be our professor for the day. So anyway, let's talk about the Wizards. They're vastly improved this season so far. They started out 6-11 for October, November. They were pretty dreadful, and I think everyone was like thinking they were going to have a horrible season. And since December, I guess they've gone 24-10 now after last night's loss. Is that right?
That sounds right. It was definitely dire straits, and I think both nationally and locally, the perception was that the team was a disaster early on. So it's really been delightful the last 6 weeks or so that they've turned it, or 8 weeks, I guess now. It's really since the beginning of December, 8-9 weeks, they've been just on such a tear.
Yeah, I mean, life goes by so fast, doesn't it? What was I going to say to you? Yeah, so let's see. So I'll just give you some stats. Here, I'm going to give you some stats about your team that you probably already know these, but yeah. So the Wizards are 10th in points per game, 9th in offensive rating, 10th in assists per game, and they had the 11th overall defensive rating in the league. So I think they started out probably, I think they were in the one at the beginning of the first 2 months of the season, they were like in the bottom tier of the league in everything, I'm pretty sure. And since then, they've really kind of gelled. And I think there's a number of reasons, obviously, for this. Like, John Wall last year was injured. He had knee surgery. And coming back, I think it took him a little bit longer than people suspected. But, man, he's going nuts right now. He's been playing out of his mind. He's averaging 23 points a game, 10.4 assists, which is second in the league. And he's got, 2.2 in... SPG, what's SPG? Shots, no, I can't.
Steals.
Oh, steals, there we go.
Yeah.
I'm good at stats, yeah. anyways, he's second in PER in the league and fifth overall in plus minus. So he's lighting it up. He's doing it, it seems, almost single-handedly, except for, Bradley Beal's there and the Polish hammer. But what are your thoughts? What do you think is the reason for this turnaround? I mean, there's so many possible reasons, from coaching to gelling to the bench actually stepping up and playing. And we'll talk about all these things. But let's start with Wall, because he's really, I think, the primary factor in why they're turning around their season.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's definitely a whole host of reasons they've turned it around. But, he's their best player and he's their engine, and he is going to be the deciding factor in how well they do. And I just think, I know personally, I didn't realize how much of an effect his off-season surgeries had on him until we saw him come back to form. Because it wasn't like he was playing terrible to start the season, but then when you see him playing now versus what he was doing then, it really shows you how limited he was for the first few weeks of the season until he kind of got right.
Right. I was like tooling around on the internet yesterday on my day off, trying to figure out some things to talk about. And I came across this article by Brian Windhorst at ESPN. He wrote a really nice article, a really, really detailed article about outlining his off-season injuries and how he had to work so hard to come back from that knee surgery. And I had totally forgotten about this because I've not been the biggest John Wall fan of all time. I like him. I like his game is just taken so much of a leap from past years. I think my thing, I always just thought that he relied too much on his physicality or his speed, and he didn't have much of a jump shot, but he's really starting to work on every aspect of his game, and it's shown so much.
Yeah, he's also just an incredible player this season in the fourth quarter. I was trying to pull some stats also for this podcast, and I didn't write them down, but he was basically, when you pull up the fourth quarter stats or the clutch time stats, where it's the final 5 minutes within 5 points, he's only being outperformed offensively by Isaiah Thomas pretty much across the board in those numbers, whether it's scoring, points produced total, or if it's effective shooting percentage, true shooting percentage, all of those, once you get to the crunch time numbers, he's right in the top five. Pretty much across the board, and that really shows in the games too. That's a thing where if you look up at the box score after the game and you see the scoring spread pretty evenly between Wall, Beal, Gortat, Porter, say they all have something like 16 to 22 points each. Well, John probably got 10 of his in the fourth quarter,
right?
And that's how it goes every game. He seems to really enjoy that crunch time spotlight, and he has been performing incredibly well in those times.
You know, it's funny. I watched their the game against who was it 2 games ago? I forget who they played. Oh my god! Oh, it was the Pelicans. So I watched their game on League Pass, the condensed version, and it just shows you all the possessions, like just shows you all the scoring possessions. So it cuts the game, like a full 3 hour game, down to about 10 minutes. It's pretty awesome. And I was watching, and like the one thing that really jumped out at me was that John Wall. Like really came on in the fourth quarter. Like at the end of the fourth, he was just like hitting everything. He was driving to the lane. He was making these incredible passes. And there's another thing. Like, I don't think he gets enough credit for his court vision. He's passing the lights out. He's making some spectacular, really beautiful plays passing the ball. Like he hit Gortat a couple times last night in the fourth quarter with just these nice passes down around the rim where, you know, he got the guys to come out to him, whatever. And then just, you know, Gortat got wide open and he just dished the ball to him for a layup. Like a couple times that happened against the Cavs. And it was just really nice to see. Like he's got a really good feel for the game. And I think, you know, he really knows what he's doing, obviously.
Yeah, I think he does have a really incredible feel for the game, and his passing, like you were talking about, is his vision is great. But one thing you said earlier that you thought he over-relied on his physicality may have some truth to it. He definitely, you know, until recently, his jumper was not too reliable. It's still the weakest part of his game, but that physicality does allow him to, that's what creates those plays where he draws the extra defender and can drop it off to Gortat, or draws a defender and kicks it out to Porter in the corner for the wide open three. That's what creates all of those plays. And then if he ever gets it on a long rebound or a steal or anything, I might only put LeBron or Westbrook ahead of him in terms of who's tougher to stop in the open court.
Yeah, I mean, because he's just so fast. Like you see it every single time there's a play, there's a replay of one of his fast break plays. He just outruns everybody. Like there's guys on the other side of the court already, and he just goes flying through to the rim and nobody can even catch up to him. It's insane. And I think that whereas a lot of other players, they come into the league and they rely primarily on their athleticism, and they never figure out like other parts of their game, like shooting and stuff. I think he might be able to do it. Yeah. He might be able to take that step where as he gets older, he'll learn that, like, because you can see it now, he's working on his jump shot, he's working on his three-point shooting, and his passing is not going to go away. It's only going to get better. So I think even though, like we saw when he came in this year, he was injured and he was slower and he couldn't really make the sort of moves that he would normally, he was still able to contribute, you know, by being able to shoot and dish. And so I think, like, his athleticism right now is primarily the thing that he relies on to get him to the rim and drive and kick and all that. But I think he's going to age well as a player, honestly, because he's getting better in every area of the game, not just in flat out running like Westbrook does, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of a trope at this point to bring up Jason Kidd as the example for how guards can age properly and work, you know, improve their shooting as they lose some of their athleticism. But he seems like a pretty good model for someone Wall should try to follow in terms of career path with that sort of thing. Because Kidd came into the league, also incredible athlete, incredible vision, and not much of a shooter, but still would score because of how athletic he was. And then as he lost some of that, he just consistently got better and better with shooting. So hopefully that's the kind of arc that John's career can have.
Right, for sure. You know, we don't want to talk too much about John Wall, because how much can you really say? He's amazing. There you go. Do you think he's like the best guard in the East right now, the best point guard in the East?
I do think that. I think it would have been, until very recently, I would have wanted to say it was Wall, but really in my heart probably would have had to say Lowry.
Yeah.
But with how sharply the Raptors have fallen off lately, I can more comfortably say that it's Wall. You know, and then maybe Wall and Lowry are 1A, 1B right now. I think they're both above Thomas just because of his defensive deficiencies, even though he is also outrageous on offense right now and winning games single-handedly for the Celtics.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny how you didn't mention Kyrie.
Not going to get a lot of Kyrie love from me.
So wait, let's steer off this path for just 1 second. You were at the game last night against the Cavs.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention this. I really wanted to talk about it. What was that atmosphere like while you were there? That must have been incredible. Because, listen, I'm not a huge fan of – I mean, I love the NBA, and I love really good games. And this game was, like, everything an NBA fan could ever want. I was getting, like, jacked up sitting at home watching it on my computer. What was it like at the game?
It was nuts at the game. It was – if you ever had – say you had someone from another country who had not watched a basketball game and had certainly not seen one in person, mm-hmm. if you just brought them to this one game, they're probably an NBA fan for life. It was bananas in the Verizon Center. The game, like you said, was everything you could ask for. The Wizards' home crowd, historically and this season, is not exactly the most raucous, typically. I saw somebody posting an article earlier this week where it was just average fan attendance, and they're pretty consistently bottom five. They really only get the Fridays and Saturday nights. They do a little better, but they still don't sell out unless it's, you know, Cavaliers, Warriors. I was at the Lakers game. That one had a really big crowd. And then the Celtics game, the funeral game, that had a really big crowd as well. And even when they're big crowds, a lot of times they're still not that loud. Like, and Wall has criticized the fan base in the past, as have other Wizards, for just not getting real involved in the game, not getting excited, not getting loud. And what has really brought them out lately, brought out some excitement, is other fan bases kind of being antagonistic. So that Celtics game, the Lakers game, and then last night the Cavs game, all these teams are going to have a lot of fans that show up to cheer for them. And then once all the Let's Go Cavs chants start going, it's like the entire crowd that normally would not be that likely to get loud, they just feel obligated to drown out the Cavs fan.
Right.
And it turns into this kind of battle back and forth, and it just gets really exciting.
That's cool. That sounds fun, man. I can't even imagine being there. It must have been insane. Yeah, how much did it kill you when LeBron hit that three-pointer, that bank three-pointer going out of bounds?
That was unbelievable. It just sucked the wind out of everybody in there, definitely myself included. It was a pretty crushing blow. I was still fairly confident after that going into overtime just because of how, you know, well they played. But
well, and then LeBron fouled out too, so it was like, oh, they definitely got this. And I don't, you know.
Yeah.
And Clutch Kyrie showed up.
Clutch Kyrie did nothing the whole regulation and then showed up for overtime. So
that's kind of what he does, man. It's kind of, I mean, if the playoffs last year showed us nothing, the finals last year showed us nothing, that's all he does. He's just, if you put him in a clutch situation, the more clutch it is, the better he gets, I think.
Yeah. That seems true. If it's just, hey, we really need a bucket, that's when he's your guy.
I mean, imagine if you had that gene for every day of your life. Like, yeah, like put me in a shitty situation. Oops, crappy. Sorry. I got to bleep that out. Put me in a crappy situation. I'm just going to really excel. I have the opposite of that gene. Like, you put me in a bad situation, I'm like, I got to go away. So, yeah, Clutch Kyrie. But that's awesome, man. It looked like a really fun game to be at. That's, again, one of those amazing games that you wish you were there. It was so much fun to watch. Like, I'm a big Sixers fan, and the Sixers were on, and I'm like, I'm going to tune it out for this game. So, yeah, I'm glad I made that choice, too, because the Sixers were awful last night.
Yeah, I think I talked to you about this in the Almighty Baller Podcast Network Slack. I don't know that needed a plug, but why not?
Why plug everything? Why
that,
not?
That I'm actually a Sixers fan as well. That's where I'm from before these last 6 years living in DC. So I would say that's who I watch second most. Like yourself, I try to watch as much NBA as possible, but it really goes for me. I catch basically every Wizards game, maybe half the Sixers games. And then as the year goes on, I whittle away the teams that don't entertain me, but
yeah. Who have you watched the least? I know we're getting off the path here, but who have you watched the least this year?
No, this is a fun topic. I would say I probably the Mavericks, I think, is who I've been avoiding basically. They haven't had Dirk most of the season. Barnes on a new team doesn't intrigue me a whole lot. I think I might watch them tonight because there's a pretty light slate of games and I want to check out Yogi Ferrell, but you know, I can do without the Mavs. That's probably who I watch the least.
That's fair. You know who mine is? You're probably not going to believe this. The Warriors.
Lay it on me.
Yeah, the Warriors. I've barely watched any Warriors.
I get that. It's oversaturation.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's that, and it's like, well, the other thing about it is like, there's a lot of West Coast teams I would like to watch, but I have to work in the morning. I can't stay up that late. So, yeah, I miss a lot of the West Coast teams. Like, I would watch Portland a lot more. Maybe Portland's up there for me too. But I just can't stay awake for those games.
I kind of got into Portland last season because my girlfriend's from there, so you know, we had some compromises. You know, I want to watch League Pass, but she's like, you know, well, okay, we'll watch the Blazers, you know. And that was really fun watching them last year, and hopefully they'll get it together a little bit more this year because I'm not too into watching them right now.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is. But anyway, back to the Wizards. We should talk about some of the other reasons for their season turnaround. It's really kind of unbelievable to me. I think this is historic too, right? Has a team ever started out with such a terrible record and gone on for like, are they third in the East now?
They're at fourth after last night, okay. But only by, you know, a half a game. Yeah.
And honestly, they could be pushing for the second seed, I think, before the season's over. They look that good at times. And with, you know, with Toronto falling and Boston being so-so at times, I think it's in the cards for him. But anyway, listen, let's talk about maybe some Bradley Beal. What do you think about? So Beal was, what did he miss? Like four games this year so far, I think? He also came out and missed a few games at the beginning of the season. So like there was a lot of injuries on this team, which obviously had something to do with them losing at first. But he's coming back and you want to jump in?
No, you go. Keep rolling.
Hey, anytime you want to jump in, just feel free. He's averaging 21, almost 22 points a game, and his plus minus is 5.4, which is really good. I think the average is, well, average is obviously zero. But so if you're a really good player, you're, you know, like four and up. It's really good. He's obviously a really good player. He's hitting 38% from three. Which is just a little bit above league average. I thought he would be much better of a three-point shooter than that, but it's actually still really, I think 35% is league average. So he's still above league average on threes. He hit some really big ones last night, and he was like, I don't know if he was doing the robot after he hit one of those shots or something, but it was pretty entertaining. And he seems like he's finally healthy again. So he's having a really big impact on the team.
Yeah, it's not even healthy again. It's healthy, you know, kind of for the first time. He's not really ever played a full season where he played, you know, 70 plus games. And this, I have to cop to not really being the biggest believer in him prior to this year. And thankfully he's proven me wrong so far. It's not that I didn't think he had the talent. You know, I could see the shooting stroke and his playmaking ability has always been there, but I just, when someone is so frequently injured and then also so frequently kind of pushed to the side in the offensive game plan, and some people would say that's the fault of Wall. I think that's more was a Whitman issue. Mm-hmm. But now that he A is healthy and playing, and B is a big chunk of the game plan, usually taking the most shots on the team, it's just working out wonders. Basically all along, everyone, the common refrain from Wizards fans for the last few years has been, if Beal could just average 20, that's what people have always been asking for. You know, Wall's doing his thing. And if Beal could just average 20, they'd be set. And now he's averaging over 20, and seemingly they're set for now, you know, at least pretty set.
I mean, they are, if they're both healthy, they are one of the better backcourts in the entire league. I, you know, the weird thing for me is that, like, I know you were talking about how you weren't that big of a Bradley Beal fan. I actually was higher on him than I was on John Wall for the longest time. And I'm kind of like, I'm obviously coming around on John Wall. I think he's a much better player than I wanted to give him credit for at the beginning. Not that I didn't want to give him credit. I just thought his whole, like I said before, you know, game was predicated on speed. But Bradley Beal, I've always thought, man, if he could stay healthy, exactly what you were saying, if he could stay healthy, he's got so much talent. And he's just seems to have that sort of it factor, you know what I mean? Where he's pretty clutch as well.
Yeah, and he also seems to thrive in those sort of moments. When he gets to take the big shots, he seems to want them, and he often hits them. Talking about his three-point percentage, he does take a lot of kind of challenging threes. He's definitely one to, you know, step back into a three or dribble around into one or take one flying, curling off a screen. So I think if he... Which is good. They need him to be taking all those shots. Mm-hmm. But I think if he were in a situation where he was getting more just open catch and shoot threes, that percentage would be a lot higher. So, you know, that's a detriment to maybe his stats, but it's a boon for the team to have him taking all those shots.
For sure. And he's only, what, 6'5", 6'4"? He and John Wall are about the same size, right?
Yeah.
So when you have him... go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think they're both 6'4", right around there.
Yeah, so when you have him coming off a screen, like, you know, if he's defended at all, shooting a three-point shot over someone, I mean, Isaiah Thomas does it all the time, but yeah, if he's a little bit taller, he's probably doing a little bit better at hitting threes as well. So there's that, but speaking of hitting three-pointers, Otto Porter, he is leading the league in three-point percentage right now, 45.9%. That's insane. 45% from three is insane.
That is insane. It's shocking how well he's shooting. Not that I didn't expect him to do well, and he's getting the kind of open looks that I was talking about Beal not getting. Porter's the beneficiary of being, you know, the clear third or even fourth option sometimes. So he's getting wide open threes in the corner or late contested threes on the wing. He's getting shots that are a lot easier to make, but he's still making them at a ridiculous clip.
Yeah, for sure. His game is actually, he's come around a lot. I think you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but people in DC were like not very high on Otto Porter. Or I think everyone thought he was going to be sort of a bust draft pick because he just wasn't producing much the last, I guess he's in his fourth season now, right?
Yeah, this is his fourth season. He basically got no run in season one and then has gotten steadily more since then. And obviously this year he's a huge part of the team.
Yeah, he's been playing really well for them. I think his defense is pretty stout too. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, he's typically their go-to
wing defender.
Yeah, I think so. Part of, you talk about him being a bust, and I, you know, or the thought that he might have become a bust was, I always feel for guys who kind of are defaulted into that situation. You know, in another draft, he's probably not going third overall.
Right.
But, and people sometimes, you know, all that, the negativity would be, is kind of lands on him. And it's not, you know, he didn't control where he got drafted. He's going to, obviously he wants to go as high as he can. But if he gets picked third and produces like a guy who, you know, maybe got picked normally 12th or something like that, let's say.
Right.
That's not really on him if the draft is weak and a team chooses him in that spot. So for him and just players who kind of land in that kind of situation, I always feel for. So that always made me kind of pull for Otto in particular, and I'm glad that he's developed. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, like, of course, it's you know, you get taken where you get taken. That has, you know, very little to do with your potential outcome, I guess. Well, I mean, it has everything to do with your potential outcome, but it has very little to do with how you'll end up with, you know, as a professional athlete. I think that has a lot more to do with, you know, your ability to pick up the schemes and ability to, like, how smart you are and how dedicated you are at working at it. And so I think, yeah, maybe the third overall pick was a little bit unfair for him, but it seems like he's starting to come around. I think my point was just that, you know, it seemed like he might go the way of so many third round picks that just kind of flame out when you have these sort of high hopes. When your team is drafting at the third position, that's all that it is hope. You hope that guy's going to pan out to be really good, you know? saying unfair or not, it just, I thought that maybe the Washington fan base was a little worried that he was not going to pan out.
That's definitely true. The Washington fan base for sure was worried he was not going to pan out. I got a buddy who, a coworker, when the new, you've seen the, like the Stars and Stripes jerseys the Wizards wear for the Salute to Service nights.
Yeah.
So when those got unveiled, they're really nice looking jerseys. My coworker immediately was like, oh, I got to get one of them. But then he was just kind of running through his mind on who he was going to get. And he already has a Wall jersey. He said he was pardon me, scared to get a Beal jersey because this is preseason and he, you know, still scared of the injuries. And just that he wouldn't get traded because of the injuries and him being, you know, probably the best trading chip we had at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why don't you get Porter? And he go, and his exact response would not be allowed on this network due to censoring. And I couldn't believe that, like, how much passion he had against Porter. And then I've realized since then that that's was pretty common at that point. Like, yeah, he definitely was thought of as somebody who was kind of turning into a bust. So, yeah. Again, glad that didn't happen.
Seriously. It's nice to see him taking that step, which, you know, maybe we should jump around here a little bit, but it makes me think that maybe Scott Brooks is a way better coach than people had given him credit for. But the one thing that people had said about him when he was in Oklahoma City is that he's a really good teacher. Like, he develops guys really well. And you saw it with Westbrook and Durant and James Harden. And I think that's holding true in Washington. I think it took a little bit of time for them all to kind of sort of come together and gel a little bit as a team. I mean, their bench was pretty bad and now it's much better. And his guys, the starters, are all playing sort of out of their mind right now. I think Scott Brooks should get a lot of credit for that. What do you think?
Yeah, it would seem that way. It's always hard to tell in any sport how much, you know, the coaching has to do with the player development. But when there's a pretty consistent correlation, or if the guy has the rep of being a player developer, and then you see it in the young players, you kind of have to take that to have some meaning to it. And all those guys are young. Wall is still only 26. Beal, 23, I believe. Porter's young. Oubre, it's only his second year. And all of those guys are outperforming any season they've ever had prior to this one. So you got to assume Brooks has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, too, it's not only just here. It's not just with these young guys. He did it in Oklahoma City first. So it's like you have another place to draw from. You have more experience. You know what I mean?
Right. That's what I'm saying. But yeah. Like, normally I'd be like, I don't know. Maybe they're just better because they're a year older. They've played together a year longer. But then when you do have that background of being a solid developmental coach, that's when it makes me think that there's a lot more to that.
Yeah. And I don't, I'm like, I'm not a coach. I don't really understand schemes all that well and like what kind of, you know, plays people run. But it seems like his guys are getting whatever it is he's implementing in that, you know, in DC. Does it seem different to you than what they had before with Whitman? And like, in what ways? Like, is it offensive flowy more? I don't even know. I don't even know how to ask this question.
It definitely flows more. Whitman talked about wanting to be a faster team and wanting to shoot more threes and wanting to do this and that. And you never saw it on the court. He talked so that, you know, when the two seasons ago, pretty much all season long, Wizards Twitter and Wizards blogosphere were just calling for the team to use their advantages and shoot more threes and run more and play a faster pace. And they never did it until they hit the playoffs and used Paul Pierce at the small ball four, swept the Raptors, and then started off pretty well against the Hawks before Wall got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it went great. And so then going into the next season, going into last season, Whitman talked about wanting to do more of that, do what was successful in the playoffs. But it just seemed to kind of be all talk. He talked about wanting to be fast.
Didn't he come out the next season and do the exact opposite of that? Didn't they have like one of the slowest paces in the league?
Directly after talking about wanting to play with pace and shoot tons of threes, they shot more long twos than almost any team in the league and were one of the slowest paces. They're just a plodding offense as they had been with him before.
It's like watching Doug Collins coach. Ugh. Anyway.
And then basically Brooks has just gone ahead and said, hey, you know, that was I think obvious to everyone, even Whitman, who he didn't do it, but it apparently was clear to him too. And so Brooks is just going ahead and actually putting that scheme into action, and the players, it fits them and they're excelling in it. The other big difference between Whitman and Brooks is that Whitman just would not adapt. He, if a player was struggling, that player wouldn't see the court for weeks. You know, he would completely put a guy to the end of the bench, and they would either lose all their minutes or most of their minutes or a big chunk of their minutes. And, you know,
well,
Brooks,
you know, Scott Brooks is kind of doing that too, right? I mean, he's shortened his bench now. They're only playing like nine guys, right? They have sort of go ahead.
Yeah, but he's kind of doing it. He's just kind of been tinkering all season long. So it's basically the way it seemed like he spent the first several months kind of trying this, trying that. He'd have all sorts of different lineups playing together. And then, you know, he'd hit on one, he'd ride it for a little bit. And if it started to slow down, he'd mix it up, try something new. And yeah, like lately Thornton's been relegated to DNPs or barely playing. And in his absence, you've had a lot more minutes for Satoransky and Trey Burke. Even McClellan's getting some play over Thornton. But it just seems like he's more willing to experiment. And I think under Whitman, that 2-8 start that the Wizards had would have been a lot more likely to continue on in misery, just because he never showed any ability to adapt, and Brooks seems to be showing that.
Well, you're telling me, correct me if I'm wrong here, but wasn't Whitman the coach that used the dryer erase board and couldn't figure out how to write on it during the playoffs and just kept turning it upside down and upside down? I mean, there's nothing on it. He just had to get to the other side. That was the best thing he ever did as a coach, I'm just saying.
Yeah, man, he created a gift that'll live on forever, so.
It's one of the best. I cannot, like, to this day, I still watch it. It cracks me up. I don't know what he was trying to figure out. It's like, it's a dry erase board. And then there's nothing on it. It's the same on both sides. Like, you're just flipping the card. I'm like, what are you looking for, man? That was so good. but yeah, listen, at least you got that from him.
Yes, I'll take what I can get.
Seriously. Anyway, speaking of Satoransky, man, that kid's like, well, he's not even a kid, though. He's like, what is he, 24, 25, or 26, something like that. I think he's a really old rookie, isn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the guys who stayed in Europe for a few years and then came over.
He looks really good. I mean, in the limited minutes that he's getting, he really knows the game. He's impressed me every time I've seen him play.
Yeah, there were a couple games earlier in the season where they gave him big minutes and he really stepped up in those games. And then lately he's kind of getting a more consistent amount of time. He's kind of coming off as the maybe like the third or fourth guy off the bench, and he is producing really well. He makes, like you said, he makes smart passes. He's really pesky on defense, and he's long, and he's pretty athletic. So seems like he's he bothers wing guys on offense and is definitely, you know, more productive and more comfortable, I would say, on the court than most rookies. And that's probably because he got to play a few years in Europe, but it shows in his play.
Yeah, for sure. Him and Oubre, obviously we talked about, he's second year, right? Oubre's in his second year.
Yeah.
He's really stepped up, and then Trey Burke. Like, I thought that guy was like done because he seems like a little bit of a knucklehead, but it seems like Brooks is getting the best out of him too. I think he hit a couple of really nice shots the other night.
Yeah, Trey Burke is probably my least favorite of the rotation guys at the moment, but you know, I'll gladly have him in there instead of Thornton. it might just be because of how much I enjoyed Ramon Sessions the last season, that I just, he's such a, like a direct replacement. He's like another small guard who comes in the backup wall, and just leaves me wishing it was Sessions. So I think that might taint my view of him, but he has been doing a lot better, since the, since they've been playing better lately.
Yeah. It's actually fun to see, you know, Washington play well too. Cause it, I feel like it rarely ever happens. So this is a, it's been actually a pleasant surprise. It's got me tuning in. I, you know, they're one of the teams that I don't get to see that often. Oh wait, all the teams except for the Sixers are teams that I don't watch that often. But yeah, man, it's fun to have them playing so well. And just again, like just to go back to this incredible turnaround, I think you got to give Scott Brooks a lot of credit. And I think, you know, John Wall being healthy helps a lot. But here's a question for you. So we talked about this a little bit. Do you think they can make it up to the second seed in the East?
Yeah, I think they can. They've still got I want to say, I know they just have one against the Celtics, but I think they might have two left against the Raptors. They play really well against both of those teams, and they're just, they're on a tear. And the Raptors are falling apart. Like you said, the Celtics are often just so-so. They definitely can. Mainly my concern is don't finish four or five. I really, it would be really cool to see the third round, and it would be really uncool to see Cleveland in the second round. As much fun as that game was last night, it would be much nicer to have the potential to see them three rounds in instead of two.
Oh my God. After that game last night, I just had daydreams of that being the Eastern Conference Finals. Like that would be so much fun because they match up really well. You know, it would be a really exciting series.
Yeah, they would. I mean, if it was anything like last night, you're looking at all the games, both teams being pretty easily over 100 points just for, you know, the casual viewer. If you're not a fan of either team, that's going to be fun to watch.
For sure. Do you think they could give LeBron and company a run for their money in the playoffs? I mean, they're playing really well. They look like on most nights they can beat most teams, but I don't know, man. What do you think? We saw it last night. I think as much as the Cavaliers have, or as much as LeBron has bellyached the last few weeks about, like, they went on a little bit of a dip, and he's complained that the front office wasn't spending money to get him players, you still see when he wants to, he can just turn it on, and, like, the Cavs are nearly, or I should say, the LeBrons are nearly impossible to beat.
Yeah, I don't think they would beat the Cavs. I'm not going to delude myself in that way, but I think, so if you remember last season, this playoffs, in the first round, the Pistons gave the Cavs just a really tough series. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got swept, but it was, every game was a really close game.
Yeah.
I think a Wizards-Cavs series would be similar to that. I think they would get a couple games. But I think it would be a series where, even though the Cavs are going to win, and you can probably write that in pen before the series, every game is going to make them sweat a little bit. And, you know, I think that if you had said that prior to the season, or even several weeks into the season, you would have got laughed at. And now you can say it on somebody else's podcast and you're not a crazy person.
Well, we're not going to make a judgment about your craziness yet, but no, but it is great to see. It's a lot of fun. It's been like, you know, the great thing about the NBA, it's a really long, long season, right? There's 82 games in a season. It's so much to take in, but throughout the course of the season, so much changes, and it's just so much fun to watch. Like when your team starts out at, you know, 6-11, and since they're like the fourth best team in the East, that's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, really is a blast. And just, yeah, like for, in terms of storylines and just how much more emotion it brings out in a fan base when teams have up and downs and just roller coaster rides across the league. It is a lot of fun.
For sure. Oh, and I forgot to talk about Marcin Gortat. I just wanted to say that he's got my favorite nickname in the league. Next to the process, he's got the best nickname in the league. The Polish Hammer, man. That is so good. Who came up with that anyway? Do you know?
I don't know. I know that he actually prefers the Machine.
Oh,
and
really?
And no one will accept it. He's come out come out publicly to say that he prefers the Machine of his two nicknames, and everyone's like, okay, Martian, well, we're going to keep calling you the Polish Hammer because that's way better.
Yeah. Okay, Polish Hammer, we got you. Yeah, that's terrible. I didn't even know about the Machine. That's awful. That's a horrible nickname.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for the laugh. Anyway, you got anything else you want to talk about? I think that's all for me.
I'd like to shout out Otto Porter's work ethic.
There you go.
So I have had the ability to go to a couple games early with the early entry this season. Let you in 2 hours before game time. And
wait, let's talk about that real quick. How do you get that?
I am a season ticket holder for the new arena football team that's going to start up in the Verizon Center, the Valor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that you can get some. I mean, that costs like nothing, but it comes with. And I don't like kind of got those sort of as a joke with some friends, you know, just as something fun to do this spring, summer.
Yeah.
But it has come with some nice perks for the other monumental sports teams, Wizards, Caps. Got to go to a Mystics game last season, so.
That's cool. So go on. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off the path here.
Oh, no, that's okay. But anyways, Otto is out there. It hasn't been a ton of games I've done that, but when I have, Otto's out there at 5 p.m. shooting constantly. He's out there with, like, the rookies and the second-year guys. It's Daniel House and Sheldon McClellan and Otto Porter out there working on their game 2 hours before game time, seemingly every game, which would speak to why his shooting numbers have gone up so tremendously this year.
Right. You know, I think about this a lot. Like, the casual fan will be like, oh, that guy doesn't want to win. That guy doesn't work at it. Da, 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 da. Like these guys, all of these guys, not just like Otto Porter, but all of these guys down to the last guy that the least motivated guy on the team, they all work so much harder at their craft and their game than I've ever worked on anything in my life. It's, you know, if you compare it, it's really embarrassing for me, but yeah, it's crazy when you see, like, they have to put in so many hours to begin with. And then when they're out there, like Otto Porter is out there two hours before the game starts, just shooting, getting up shots. That's insane. You really got to appreciate that and admire it.
Yeah. It's bananas how hard these guys work. And it's really cool to see it when it pays off.
Yeah. Like that, you know, it's funny because, I think it was the Windhorst ESPN article, he was detailing about how, you know, John Wall was working back from injury and stuff. Just like the hours, like up to 8 hours a day doing rehab stuff just so you can go play a game. That just seems insane to me. I mean, it's amazing. It's just so much, like so much. I run on occasion. You know, I do, like, I try and get out a couple times a week, not in the winter, but, and every time I go out, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I can't imagine what these guys put themselves through. It's really insane.
Yeah, that's a great point. I broke my leg actually playing basketball maybe 7-8 years ago, I guess it was. And I, you know, did the absolute bare minimum amount of rehab. And it showed in the fact that I, like, couldn't run for basically a year and a half, at least not properly.
Wow.
And, yeah, and then you talk about in that article, John Wall's doing 8 hours of physical therapy work in a day is insane. I wouldn't even, you know, like, do the stretches that take 10 minutes. I wouldn't even, I was too lazy to do that.
Seriously, I tore my rotator cuff playing basketball a number of years ago. And I went to the doctor. He's like, yep, you tore something. I was like, okay, cool. He's like, I can send you to a specialist. I'm like, no, I'm good. Never got it fixed. I can't shoot. I mean, I never could shoot, but I really can't shoot now.
You gotta factor what it does to your shot. Maybe, you know, pushes you left. You gotta like, compensate for your hook or your slice or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm just bad at basketball.
Defense will never know what's coming. You'll be shooting way off left. And they'll just leave you alone and it'll bend around and go in.
It's a boomerang shot. Yeah. Anyway, I think we're digressing here.
a little bit.
That's fine. That's the most fun of a podcast. You know, you get to talk about whatever you want because it's your podcast.
Yeah, on Zardcast we do a dedicated chunk to just talking about Young Pope every week. So
no, yeah, tell me, is that show any good? My wife keeps talking about like maybe wanting to watch it. I'm like, I don't know. I hear things.
I'm not that into it, and I would certainly have stopped watching it by now if I didn't have to talk about it on our podcast every week. But the other two guys, if you were talking to them, they love it. So
really?
two out of three yeses and one no.
Well, as the song goes, two out of three ain't bad, I guess.
Yeah, it's true.
I usually do like this random winding thing in the beginning, so I'm good on talking, but you know, there's always good stuff to talk about. But anyway, Gary, listen, I'm going to let you go. Plug your stuff again. Plug your podcast that can be found on the same podcast network as my podcast.
All right. Podcast is Zardcast. We put one out every week. It's also on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I'm Gary Jones, and I'm on Twitter at TheGaryJones, Jones with a Z. And that's about it.
Cool. Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming on and talking some Wizards with me. Maybe if they get into the playoffs, maybe if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, you should come back on and we'll talk about them then.
Yeah, that sounds good. Maybe if Sixers, if Embiid starts playing again, Sixers get on a tear, if they claw their way up to the 7 and play the Wizards at the 2.
That would be fun.
I know we're dreaming big there, but if it happened, we got to talk it out.
Oh my God, yeah! If that happens, you can we'll talk every night. How's that? Every time they do a game, we'll get on the line.
Deal.
All right, cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on again. I'm gonna let you go, and I'll see you around soon, probably.
All right, sounds good.
All right, bye bye.
Later.
Well, there you go, Gary Jones from the Zardcast podcast, these Wizards. 18 podcasts on the ABPN network. There you go. Free advertising again. Well, it's not free, but whatever. I mean, everything's free. Everything's free and not free at the same time. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Thanks for listening in again, guys, and gals. And I hope you had a good time this week. Next week, I'm going to have more crazy stuff to talk about, I'm sure. And we'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of 3 Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.